Answering your tough financial questions for the past 21 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean. Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it is about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean would like to help you by answering your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you are here with us as we talk about the world of finance. Both myself and my co-host here, we're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays with people like yourself. We come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. And we cover all things financially related, such as saving for college education, estate planning issues,
paying off your mortgage, whether you need life insurance or don't need life insurance, whether you're being pitched the greatest investment on earth, whether someone has come to you and said, you have to do this.
And would love to.
We'll take your call and you want a second or a third or even a fourth opinion. We're here for you.
Yeah, and it's a good place to come. 1-888, quick story before we take this call. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number to be part of the program. Well, it's 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766. And actually, I want to discuss, I had a phone call with a family member that was being, I'll cover that since we take this.
No,
I'm going to, there's someone on hold here. We're going to take the call and I'll come back.
Okay. I'd like to hear the story.
Well, I know you would. That's why, this is what you call radio tease. We're going to.
Oh.
Keep you tuned in that way.
Yeah. So don't go away. You're going to miss Scott talking about the dirt that takes place in
and
his family.
There's been a cat missing for 4 days.
Oh, yeah.
Story at 11.
Big cat stories. Everyone loves a cat story.
All right. If you want to join us, 1-888-2-HANSON. Let's start off in San Francisco. Talk with Tom. Tom, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hello. Yeah, my name is Tom.
Hi, Tom.
And I guess you heard it before. I want to invest in selling covered call stock options. And what's your opinion about that?
Why do you want to do this?
So to make extra income, and from what I hear, it's a good investment.
Got it.
Is this you want to do these calls on a stock that you currently own?
Yes, uh-huh.
Got it. So you own this stock, and you want to sell covered calls. What's the downside of actually selling the covered call, Tom?
Downside? Well,
For you.
I think the downside is, from what I hear, is you limit your gain if it's, happened to shoot up, 10% for that week.
That's, or whatever the number is.
Whatever. That's the downside. But, in general, it seems like advantage, mostly advantage, if the stock doesn't move or move up a little bit or move down a little bit, you make a little bit of money on it.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the challenge with those. If you employ that strategy over a long period of time, your performance is going to severely lack that of both the stock market indexes as well as even a fixed income index. There are periods of time where the income you receive is going to still hold the stock and the income you receive off it's going to do well. But for a long-term investment strategy, over a long period of time, it's not a good moneymaker.
And if you own a stock that you're comfortable selling a covered call on and you continue to do it over a long period of time, let's say that you said, okay, I've got this.
Well, stock eventually will be covered on. It'll be called out.
Correct. I've got this stock XYZ. And I am going to sell covered calls. For the rest of the listeners, what happens is selling a covered call is you take a stock and you say, and someone says, I'm going to give you a dollar amount that I can take this stock from you at any point in time in the next 90, 180, 365 days.
As an example, let's say the stock is trading for $50 a share today. And a covered call, you might say, all right, I'll tell you what, you can have the option to buy it for me for $55 6 months from now. But you got to, for that right, you're going to pay me a little bit of income. And Tom would be betting that the stock's not going to hit, and I'm just making up numbers here, that the stock's not going to hit $55. So if Tom says, well, wait a minute, I want to be a little more conservative. So rather than the strike price being $55, let's call it $75. They could do that, but someone's going to say, well, the chance of it hitting $75 is so slim. Instead of paying you, I'm going to pay you next to nothing.
There's going to be very little value in the covered call.
So the only way, Tom, that you would be able to get much income from this is by having that strike price closer to the current market value, right?
So If you, let's say you had this stock, we use Scott's example, at $50 a share, and you sell covered calls on it consistently for the next 3 years. The question I would have is, why do you own the stock if you don't think it's going to go up in value?
Well, I'm saying, let's say you're overselling, something like PG&E or something, or like something conservative, not these high tech stocks. Yeah.
So what's the premium you're going to get on a PG&E stock for selling the covered call?
That's stock that fell over 40% in the last year.
Well, how much are they going to pay you for that premium on that particular stock?
Well, I mean, I look at it, it's about, if it's just monthly, it's about 1%, close to 1% a month. So about 12% a year premium if you do something like maybe 5% over the...
Yeah. Do you own...
But if it's 5% over, it's the stock price, it's going to get called out.
Yeah. So do you own PG&E right now?
No, I don't know.
So I
also mutual fund. But
got it. So someone is telling you, or you believe that you should go buy these individual stocks as a investment strategy and then sell covered calls on them in order to derive the income from these particular stocks. It's a terrible strategy. You shouldn't own those stocks in the first place. You wouldn't buy anything that actually is, you don't think it's going to go up in value.
We're not fans at all in that trading strategy.
Okay. Yeah.
That's how were you, out of curiosity, how were you introduced to it?
Listening to this stock market trader on this channel.
And they want you to come to a weekend thing and pay money for it.
To learn.
Trading, probably using their technology. My guess is, I don't know much about them, probably using their technology and probably through their
portal, whatever. Yeah. So no, it's don't do it, Tom. Please don't do it.
Yeah. Or if you do it with a little and you'll learn that way. So anyway, appreciate the call, Tom. You know, I have enough nephews, so I'm not going to.
Yeah,
and a nephew was trading some options, and he was like 18. He had saved up some money and had an account, and he was telling me, and he said, "Yeah, do you know what I think?" He actually said, "You know what a cover call is, Uncle Scott?" I'm like, "Yeah, actually, I do." But so he was doing it for a while, and I said, "Well, you know, he had saved up a few grand or something like that." And he last time I talked to him, he had quit doing it. He asked me my opinion. I thought, "Well, it's good for you doing it this age because you're going to learn." And the best, there's nothing like a loss to have a good education.
That's funny because I have a nephew that's trading the VIX. So he's not doing covered calls. He's just trading the VIX.
When you trade options, it's a zero-sum game, right? It's not like if you own a company that grows in value, there's lots of people can gain through this process.
Yeah.
But when it's a pure option, it's a zero-sum game. No different then let's say up at you go to Vegas at the blackjack table,
and you bet on, well, I don't, It's more like black. It's more like roulette with
okay,
red or black. I know you're not much of a gambler, nor am I.
There are some odds not quite the same. So there we go, red or black. That's better.
That's it.
But the house makes a little bit of money because they...
It's also known as friction, and the friction is the cost of the trade.
So there's trading costs involved. So over a long period of time, those who make the most money, not the most, those who make money in the long term are the traders, the ones who place the trades.
Yeah, the brokers.
The brokerage firms.
Yeah.
That old line from Trading Places.
Yes.
Tell them the good news, Mortimer. Whether their clients make money or lose money, we still get paid. That's how it works in the options market.
Yeah.
And there's a...
And in Trading Places, they were trading orange juice futures.
Yes. Off a stolen report.
Yes.
Which would be highly illegal for everybody, which is kind of the irony of it.
But it was really probably at the peak of Eddie Murphy's acting career.
It may have been. Is he still doing... Anyway.
I don't know where Eddie Murphy is today.
You don't? I don't.
And nor does Eddie Murphy probably know where I am. So it's all fair.
Is that right? He doesn't know where you are? All right. We're going to take a quick break for a commercial, I think. And we'll be right back.
Are you a sports fan? Each year, teams spend the preseason getting ready for their big opening game. Well, retirement's a little like that. The difference is that instead of a yearly preseason, you spend your career getting your finances in shape for a retirement that could last 25 years or more. Think of Hanson McLean as the coach that gets you ready for your retirement season. For a free retirement readiness consultation, visit us at HansonMcLean.com today.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. 1-888-2-HANSON to join the program.
You were going
to
tell us about...
1-888-2-HANSON. So...
You were going to tell us about a family member.
Yes, I had a call last week. My voicemail at the office sounded a little upset from a kind of a more of a distant family member. She's 84 years old, widowed. Okay? And she's, Scott, can I talk to you? So I call her, and she says that her attorney, who did her estate plan, wants her to buy this long-term care insurance and some other stuff, and it's going to be several thousand dollars a year, and she's worried that she can't. So I start talking to her. Her home is paid. She's 84 years old.
Okay.
Her home's paid for roughly $400,000 or $500,000. She has savings of roughly $400,000 to $500,000. She has pension income. She has Social Security income.
She's 84 years of age.
She's 84 years of age.
Widow.
So this attorney who did an estate plan for her in the past charged her $1,500 for this assessment, long-term care assessment.
Okay.
That she went along with. Now he wants her to do some other sort of things. She was a little confused by it at all.
Were you confused by it?
No, I said sometimes what happens is people want to artificially impoverish somebody. And she says, yeah, that's the term.
So you knew exactly what he was doing.
So she starts crying to me on the phone, how nervous she is about this.
Like she's got to do it, but she knows it's wrong.
And she says, well, Bob always took care of this stuff when he passed away. And so now I'm responsible and I'm really nervous about this. And I felt guilty about even calling you, is what she told me.
Well, that's
a family member. And so, of course, we had some conversation for a while. Don't talk this attorney, et cetera. But I'm thinking,
so,
an 84-year-old...
Let me guess what the recommendation was, Scott.
Wasn't all that clear on it.
My guess, it was a life annuity with period certain. In order to artificially impoverish her, to make her eligible for Medi-Cal, if she ever went into a long-term care facility.
Yes, to get on a government program.
Yes.
I said to her, first of all, let's assume that was your number one goal, not paying any of your own care and getting all your assets to your heirs. Do you, assuming that you need this kind of care in the future, do you really want to be in a government facility?
And that's kind of murky how that works anyway, but.
Or wouldn't you rather have? So here's the roughly $1 million in assets, other income coming in. I explained to her that she could survive 20 plus years in a nursing facility. Roughly.
And she's 84.
She's 84 already.
And so you just told her, don't talk to the attorney anymore.
Correct. Yeah. I said, have him call me. Have him call me personally and to talk through the stuff.
My guess is that he's not going to call.
But so I got off the phone and I thought, there are a lot of other 84-year-old widows out there
that don't have Scott Hansen as a family relative. Member.
Yeah.
Or a family member that they'd be comfortable talking about this with.
And one of the reasons we've been doing this program at Hansen McLean for 20 plus years is to help those sort of situations. Yeah. So,
and it involved an insurance product of some form.
The attorney charged her $1,500 for an assessment.
To knowing that at the end of the day.
For an assessment.
Well, actually, he didn't really need the assessment because if he did the trust, he knew where the assets were.
Yeah, I understand.
How hard is an assessment on whether you need long-term care insurance or not? And it wasn't a long-term care insurance policy if he used the word artificial impoverization.
I don't know exactly what he was. Once I looked at it, she had plenty of assets.
You don't need to worry about it.
Just plenty of assets, doesn't need to
self-insure.
Absolutely self-insure, 84-year-old. Well, one of the reasons we've been doing this program for so many years is to help answer those kind of questions. 1-888-2 Hansen to join Hansen McLean's Money Matters. And we are in Calaveras County, California with Michael.
Home of the frog jumping Jubilee. As yes. Made famous by Mark Twain.
Yes. Michael, welcome to Hansen McLean.
Yes, I'm Michael from Calaveras County.
Hi, Michael.
And
that is where the frog jumping contest is, the Jubilee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting to see that. You know, if you want to come up, it's like the second week in May, I believe.
Yeah, I'm going to have to miss it again this year, Michael.
Yeah, what I'm calling about, I got a burnout on the Butte Fire in September of 2015, I believe.
You say burnout? Did your home burned?
Yeah,
in the fire?
It burned to the ground. All the trees around, beautiful pine trees, and so forth. Well, what I'm calling about is I hired a law firm, a pretty really good law firm. It went on and on for about a year and a half or 2 years, kind of going back and forth between the PG&E. This is a lawsuit with the PG&E. And so it finally came down to mediation. I went before a mediation judge, and I was able to get a good settlement, very good settlement. Quite a bit of money.
Was the settlement much more than the value of your home
and property, including lumber?
Well, there's kind of a separate thing. I had it insured by AAA. I had the homeowner's insurance,
which covered the home replacement.
This is different than homeowner's insurance.
Yes.
So just so you understand.
Okay. That's why we're trying to get to.
That's what we're trying to get to. Okay, so this was the home was covered.
I'll just slow down a little bit.
The home was covered, the value of there was a value on the property, the trees, that was all covered by your homeowner's insurance, and that was paid out as a claim.
Yeah,
you filed a civil lawsuit, Michael. You filed a civil lawsuit against Pacific Gas and Electric. Pacific Gas and Electric, rather than go to court with that, then mediated it. With between you and Pacific Gas and Electric.
Cut a deal.
So they cut a deal, right? You went into a room and you went back and forth and back and forth. And then they came up with a number and they gave it to you. What was that number? What was the number they gave you?
Well, how much was it?
Yes.
Well, I'm not really supposed to.
Oh, yeah. Well, then don't bring it on the screen.
All right. Then don't.
Right when you're asking that, I imagine there's a gag clause.
I wouldn't say it, how much just it like, was because they didn't want other people to find
it.
Out.
Yeah, got it. Okay,
so. Let me say it was on the higher end. It is quite a lot of money. Just put it. It's a very high amount of money, but I'm not.
Okay.
What's
your question for us?
Well, congrats, by the way, on pushing that.
Yes. Many people did not do that. What's your question for us?
I have a friend that was in a similar situation. He went to H&R Block And the person there at the local office said that he wouldn't owe any taxes on this amount. I contacted my own tax preparer, and he thought there would be maybe some taxes on it. So what I was wondering, if you have had any of your clients or anybody that you know who has, you have any idea? I'm trying to get an idea whether I'm going to be owing taxes or not.
You probably will have some taxes on that portion.
Yes, it will probably come taxed to you as ordinary income. Unless there was something in the mediation that actually didn't allow for it. So, most likely, because it was over the value of the property, it was a mediated settlement that had something to do with either pain or suffering or discomfort or, you know.
And there are some that are called qualified disasters, where they're federally declared disasters, where they'll get some tax relief. But it doesn't cover all income. Because what happened, let's say you paid $100,000 for a house, and by the time it burned to the ground, it's worth $500,000. Well, someone could argue, like, you get a check from the insurance company, that's $400,000 gain. If it's primary residence, sometimes it could be a gain, and you have to use your personal exclusions, the $250,000 or $500,000 if you lived at it two in the last 5 years.
But that isn't the situation, because your insurance company actually paid out for the value of the home.
So this is above and beyond.
So this didn't actually reimburse you for any property that was lost in this. So it is highly likely that this is.
You have a good CPA.
Taxable.
Yeah, he's pretty good for.
Well, when he said maybe, that's might be. I mean, what's you wanted a definitive answer? That's why you go hire a professional.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was
his
answer?
Well, he seemed to. His thing was that looking into the law part of it, he thought maybe I would have to pay the taxes on it.
Okay, then.
But
what he
said, maybe I shouldn't say this over the air. But
you can say it, because he's not listening, nor is many people. There's more people not listening than are.
He said that it would be a huge public relations thing for the IRS to go and take these settlements, you know, go and tax.
Oh.
So he said.
Okay, he said what?
Yeah, you're laughing.
Yeah, I'm laughing.
I am too. Well, I'm not laughing.
The reason is that it doesn't matter what he thinks. The code is the code. The tax code is the tax code. We don't really care what he thinks. All he had to do was look up the code.
If his advice is, you know what, this is the code, but let's go ahead and ignore the code because, you know, they're not going to come after you. Are they going to come after the guy in the frog jumping county?
No
kidding.
Because
his house burned to the ground?
That's what I kind of got, that idea.
You need to go get a new accountant.
Seriously. I'm dead. I totally agree with Pat.
That's not an answer. That's not a professional. That's a guy that says, hey, wink, wink, nod, nod. We'll just skirt this thing and see what happens.
Yeah.
It's not. It's just a law.
And if he's going to cheat from the tax man, maybe he's going to cheat you too.
The only other thought I had, like, my friend, he said he went to H&R Block, and it's not in a local town, you know, so I guess it's a franchise. I don't know how H&R Block works.
I don't know. Well, I don't know. I'm not going to say anything positive or negative about H&R Block.
No, although
I have met people who work there part-time, and they get their training over a weekend course.
Well, you just said something negative, Scott. You said you weren't going to.
What'd I say negative about it?
You said they got the training over the weekend. That wasn't positive. You didn't say, man, they got this great training over the weekend.
All right, so, Michael, if I were in your situation, I would make sure I used a reputable CPA. And I wanted to get a definitive answer. Because here's what. If you seek out quality advice
and it's wrong.
It's wrong. The IRS is not going to slap penalties on you.
Yeah.
If you don't, they get penalized.
I understand what you were saying, but my question was on this H&R Block person.
Yeah, don't worry. We don't know that. We don't know that situation. You can't even.
Just a bit.
It's hearsay.
I just wanted.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I just want to say one thing. I didn't know, since H&R Block, I have nothing against them or anything like that. All I'm saying is They're kind of, I think they're kind of like franchises.
That's correct.
So I was wondering if the big people in the company, you know, in the corporation or the big company had gone to the IRS and asked them, are you going to,
no.
What are you going to do in relation to settlements?
No.
No way.
Nope.
There's no way that happened.
It didn't happen.
And they said, wink, wink, nod, nod, don't worry.
It doesn't
We're not
going like
to come
that.
After it. I know this is the law, but we feel bad for people who lost their homes. This was a settlement you got above and beyond your insurance proceeds.
Most likely, it is 100% taxable, both state and federal. You need to go to a qualified tax CPA and have them do your taxes and pay the taxes on it.
Yeah.
Don't worry about what your friend did at H&R Block. It might be in a completely different situation.
Yeah.
Just worry about yourself.
Appreciate the call, Mike. And I got to tell you, as financial advisors, Pat and I have both seen this over the years where people, there's an area, it's not even really gray. They cross that line hoping they're not going to get a caught. Years later, we've seen people go into bankruptcy. We've seen families, marriages getting ruined over these tax situations.
Yep.
Where people know, they know the right thing.
I've also seen people shop advice where they actually just go to as many advisors as they can until they get the answer they want.
Good luck on that strategy, too. We're going to take a quick break. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Want more of Hanson McLean's Money Matters? Visit HansonMcLean.com/radio to get the Money Matters podcast.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson here.
Pat McLean.
You know, real quick, the previous caller we had made mention of PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric, large utility. And we've mentioned this on the radio program before. Because Pacific Gas and Electric, their stock fell about 40% after the fires through Napa County in Northern California last fall, and the company then discontinued its dividend, a utility company, which one day were used to be known as widow and orphan stocks because they were so conservative.
Yep, back in the day.
Back in the day. And so it just, as going through that, it was just started, I was thinking again about the importance of not being overweighted in any one particular stock.
And why was it called the, why? So Scott, why were they called widow and orphan stocks? Because the rates oftentimes and the profitability was set by the public utility commissions.
Still is.
And they would get a pass, almost a pass. And it wasn't just them. Back in the day, if you think about back in the day, airlines were regulated, rates were set by a government agency. Telecommunications were set rates back in the day. Remember, I'm 55, and my we would only call your grandparents after like
Sunday night. 7 p.m. or something. Yeah,
yeah,
right. Because the rates were so expensive.
But that was all set.
I remember having to go through in high school. I had a girlfriend for a while that was a.
Are you bragging now?
It was only one I ever had, and
it was a toll call.
It was a toll call. I have to go through the phone book, the bill each month, and pay my share of my phone bill. That's because it was expensive.
That's true love.
Oh, yeah.
That is true love, Scott.
Hey, a girl would talk to me in high school. What are you going to do? She might have been five time zones away, but, you know.
But it doesn't matter.
English wasn't that important either.
It was the connection. It was magnetic.
Okay.
So. They were, in those industries, that the rates were set, right? And then what happened is the deregulation took place, not necessarily by the government, by upstarts. So the telecommunication industry was the upstart that came in there with Southern Pacific Railroad was the one that actually kind of broke up the regulations and it started to break up the regulations. You're thinking Southern Pacific Railroad. Sprint stood for Southern Pacific Railroad Inter-Network Telecommunications, where they actually managed their own communication lines, and then they started selling access into the marketplaces. The point being is that I don't believe there is such a thing as a widow or orphan or a safe stock anymore. Because
There's no more regulated industry.
Change. The last one is the electrical, but they're not going to get the PUC isn't going to give them a pass this time.
Not that it's the speed of change in industry as well. Right? You look at some of the largest companies today, they didn't exist 20 years ago.
Yes.
Google.
Amazon. Netflix. We can go on. Right? And then you think of some of the largest companies that existed 20, 30, 50 years ago that are no longer Sears. Still around.
Barely.
Yeah. Kmart. Toys R Us.
That's a recent, yeah.
Woolworth. Recent. Woolworth. Toys R Us. I still remember on our birthdays when we were little, we'd get $20 and we could go buy whatever we wanted at Toys R Us for birthday. That's $20. Nice. Bucks. Except once you spent more than an hour there, my dad would start yelling at you that you had to leave.
Well, an hour. That sounds reasonable. So just recently, the last few weeks, General Electric, GE, got booted from the Dow Industrial 30. And replaced.
And remember that, well, don't remember. You may not have ever known it. The Dow Industrial Average actually started in the early 1900s with just, what, 11 or 12 stocks?
I think 9 or 11.
Nine
were railroad, 11 stocks, if my recollection.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Nine were railroad. Out of the Dow Jones Industrial Average, 9 were railroad out of the 11 stocks in it.
So GE has been a member of the Dow,
which is 30 stocks now,
since 1907.
So 110 plus years.
And it's just been replaced by Walgreens.
Walgreens of all things. So what the Dow Jones Industrial Average is actually tries to do is replicate a basket of stocks that reflects the U.S. economy,
mm-hmm.
the companies in the U.S. economy. And they throw out an industrial one to put a retail pharmaceutical distribution company in there. Not only bricks and mortar, but...
It's healthcare delivery now too, right?
Yes. Yes. It was trying to get a little bit more into it with Theranos, but it never really worked out that well.
Yeah, well.
So that's a whole other story. What does this mean, Scott?
So here's what here's why we're talking about this. That stock in the year 2000, so we've been doing this a period of time, right? And if you think about your retirement savings, going to be around 2 or 3 decades or more, right? Maybe at least 3 decades. A lot of market cycles. In the year 2000, this is right after the big tech boom of the 1990s. If you're nearing retirement, you remember what we're talking about here. And if you are a younger investor, you're like, well, it's doing so well now. Things were on fire. The stock market was on fire. But GE in particular was the largest valued company in the United States. They were in a variety of
what
industries.
What year was that?
2000.
Okay.
They were in a variety of industries.
Aerospace, finance.
Yeah, a variety of industries. Big in those areas. And they were so diversified, there was talk that there was like almost like owning the S&P 500 because it was so diversified. And it was such, but it performed so much better. I recall a particular individual. And Hanson McLean, we for years, decades, we've offered free consultations for those nearing retirement, go through our planning process, helping people. And this gentleman was planning on retirement. I think I met with him 3 or 4 years in a row. He always had everything in GE stock and would debate with me on why he needs to diversify. So I don't need to diversify, blah, 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 blah. So he never diversified. Retired around 2000 and said, you know, I think I'm just going to keep my GE stock. So he did not become a client of Hanson McLean. That stock, since 2000, has fallen nearly 80%.
In 18 years.
Think about this. The Dow is around 10,000 then. The Dow is roughly 25,000. So the typical stock in the Dow is up 2.5 times. This is down 80%.
And this was the darling. This was the largest company at the time in the 80s, was one of the largest companies in the world.
And one that seemed like it was fairly conservative because it was so diversified. Down 80% over that period of time. So, you know, there's other members of the Dow today that won't be members of the Dow in the future.
There are darlings of the stock market today that will not be in
darlings
the future.
Darlings tomorrow.
They will be upset or changed by something that we
don't even
can't even
about.
Predict. Can't even.
Who predicted the internet that was 20, 30 years ago that was going to?
A couple people bet on it, I don't know if they thought it would get this far. But the point being is it's important to have a diversified portfolio, regardless of whether you work for the company or not. We worked with lots of GE retirees that were in love with that stock.
Yes.
As well as
the people. Look, if you retire from a company whose stock hasn't done well, it's easier to diversify. But when you're retiring from a company that's done great, if you're retiring from Apple today, great. Apple's made you rich, right? But if you're going into retirement, what's your objective here? And if Apple falls by half, not predicting it will, but it could.
Yeah.
Could something replace? So just keep that in mind.
And there's example after example. People that retired from the phone company that had Vodafone or
Lucent.
Or Lucent Technologies. We had lots of clients that retired from Lucent Technologies.
You can think of like the Enrons and WorldComs that were fraudulent.
Yeah, these were real companies.
Yeah, without there's no frauds going on. Good, you know, good companies. 1-888-2 Hanson to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters. 1-888-2-HANSON. And let's go to Roy in Sacramento. Roy, you're with Hanson McLean.
Oh, hi, Pat. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Hi.
Hi. Well, here's, you know, first of all, I think that I love the administration we have in Washington, D.C. What I have is I do not have any pension or any major retirement funds, and I'm 61.
Okay.
But my wife has a great job with one of a major medical facilities in California, and she has a 401k and a retirement and blah blah blah. I'm heavily vested in real estate.
Okay.
And so you know maybe 7-8 properties which are pretty up there in equity as I speak to you.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, would I be okay just liquidating like several of these? You know, then what do I do with that money? That's number one. But then is there any way to avoid paying the feds on the gain side? And, you know, I have taken depreciation over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And that will be recaptured according to my CPA.
Unless you exchange it. Real estate is actually still one of the last places where there's still great tax benefits. And not making a comment about our administration being good or bad, one thing I can say is because the president, I think because the president's background in real estate, this huge tax reform we saw.
Was totally, the real estate business wasn't even.
Not impacted at
nor
all.
Nor was the private equity or venture capital to speak of.
Yeah, a little bit of interest deductions. But
not much. Not like it did if you were a high taxpayer in the state of California.
The question I would have for you, if you own 7 or 8 properties.
Why
would you want to sell them? I mean, if at retirement stage, collect the rents off them.
And try to pay them off prior to retirement. So I would question the strategy of actually at this stage
why
of the game.
Why do you need to liquidate them?
Selling those in order to invest in either equity or bonds or a balanced portfolio. Because you got to where you got. And that the drag.
Unless you have a lot of debt on these.
Yeah. The drag on the properties and selling them would. The tax ramifications might not benefit you. It isn't the path I would have suggested you take in order to get to retirement. I would have suggested a more balanced approach with some real estate maybe and some diversified portfolios and using some of the tax laws for 401ks or IRAs. But you are where you're at. So how much debt is on these properties?
The debts, I mean, they're pretty minimal.
So why don't you try to pay them off? And you've got, what did you say, 7 or 8 of these things?
And why are we having this conversation? Well, what's going wrong?
Well, I don't know. I was just thinking that maybe if I can liquidate, have all this money sitting somewhere, and I don't have to worry about anything, and I can do what I want to do since I'm only 61, and you know, it's still about 4 or 5 years away from Social Security.
What about hiring a property manager?
Yeah.
Hire a property manager for all these and say, look, we're only going to have a conversation once or twice a month. We'll have a conversation on the 1st and the 15th. Other than that, I don't want an email from you. I don't want a conversation from you. You deal with it. We're going to talk twice a month or once a month or whatever it is. You set the parameters so that it's relatively easy for you to deal with.
And it may make sense for you to liquidate the properties. But if you've got a lot of embedded gains in these, the state and federal taxes may not make sense for it. So like I said, it isn't that it isn't the ideal retirement portfolio. But you're where you're at, and the tax drag might be so great that if you sell it and you take the gains and you invest in a diversified portfolio, it may or may not generate any more income for you.
But it probably won't.
But if you hold these until you die or your spouse dies, assuming they're titled correctly, you receive what's called a full step up in basis, and the gain is wiped away. So you could come and talk to an advisor or any advisor. I'd be skeptical of an advisor that suggested you start selling these things and invest in their portfolios. I don't know if that would be in their best interest. But my guess is it's probably a little too late in the game to be liquidating these these houses and then buying into another portfolio.
I don't know if it's late in the game. I just think you've had this success doing this strategy. On the scale of being aggressive or conservative, this tends to be on the fairly conservative side.
Yeah.
Don't have a lot of debt on it. You understand them. When things go through market cycles, you understand it. You cash this out and you put it somewhere else. And it's a completely different environment.
It's a new game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you were my brother and we had this conversation, I'd say, Roy, hire a property manager.
Don't worry about it.
And make sure you just limit the communication with the property manager so it doesn't feel like another job for you.
Well, assuming that if you had a brother, you'd still be talking to them, Scott. So that's a premise that we need to get over.
Roy?
Well, listen, I sincerely appreciate your program, and thank you for the advice. You guys have been great. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Roy. I appreciate it.
Appreciate the call.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
That's awfully kind words on this part. But
Scott has no brother.
You know, it's interesting. So California, where we're headquartered, proposition ballot on the ballot this fall of rent control.
Yes.
And it'll be interesting to see. So I had lunch with an apartment developer a few weeks back, and he was very nervous about it.
He's
a big developer. He's got 100 plus employees and whatnot. He's a big developer on real estate and apartments.
It will not help.
He's like, I'm not building any more apartments in California.
It's not helping the supply
of course not.
Housing.
We've got we'll go invest some money, take some risk, and by the way, we're going to limit your return.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, we've got this incredible homeless problem here. Rents are too high. So what we're going to do is we're artificially going to change the market to make it less desirable for you.
Studies have shown it doesn't work. It's going to hurt things, not make it better. It'll help for that one individual.
For a period of time.
My wife's grandmother lived in the same place in San Francisco for 30 some odd years in this building. Beautiful area of town right near downtown, off California Street. Nice building. And she had two-bedroom apartment. It was huge. Paying $600 a month. And it was
really?
Yes, but she would complain because the landlord never did any repairs. She talked about the one next door.
Are you kidding?
Of course they're not going to do any repairs.
The landlord had a party when she moved out.
Of course. But my point is, from an investment standpoint, for apartments in whether it's California or other states, if you kind of read some of the tea leaves, there could be some additional risk. Or if you own REITs, traded REITs, that invest in apartment complexes.
In in states where...
you see rent control enacted, it's not going to be good for a return.
It's not good for. Yeah. And there is forms of rent control in the state of California now. They're just trying to change them.
Anyway, now let's turn and talk real advice. This is the part of our program where we talk to a real financial advisor with Hanson McLean and hear about a situation that this advisor had with a client of ours. Keep in mind that the experience they had with a client could be different than any experience that you've got. And today on our program, we've got Lauren Williams, and Lauren is not only a certified financial planner, she's got a MBA with emphasis in financial planning. I think she's got another degree. She loves getting education. She's also taught at UC Davis Extension financial planning, and she also teaches some programs internally for
the staff
helping,
here.
Helping our staff with their own personal financial planning. Not the certified financial planners. With their, I mean, the overall
client
general,
service people,
general
people
staff.
Marketing, accounting, administrative.
Lauren, welcome to the Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here with us. So tell us about a client you're working with and where they were with retirement and what happened.
Well, I had this really lovely couple come into the office back in 2016. They had about $650,000 in assets with a couple pensions and some Social Security sitting out there, both around the same age, 58. And
so pretty well set retirement-wise, primarily because of the pensions and
Absolutely. So initially when they came in, they wanted to be about 5 years out from retirement. And we were on track. We were trying to aggressively pay down the house at $3,000 additional each month.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, they were doing great. And then one day, the husband had a heart attack. And it kind of changed everything about their plan. Due to the health scare, he kind of got more in touch with what he really wanted, which was actually to travel the world. Hmm. And so when they came back into the office at the end of 2017, having this life experience, we had shifted priorities to now making it happen. So the plan was to spend a year traveling eastward across the globe. And what we did was work together with one of their after-tax accounts. I think it was $138,000. And keep in mind, they're under 59 and a half, so we can't take distributions because there'll be penalties. So what we had to do is make all the expenses work within this $138,000. So we developed a plan throughout 12 months, month by month, a budget of covering the home payment along with the travel. And so they have now been able to...
And was the plan to retire...
So the plan is to go into an early retirement. At this point, if they come back and they don't have the funds needed for retirement, both of them still have the ability to go back to work doing what they were doing before. But I believe with the way that we set up the financial plan that they're still going to be able to start their pensions at 60, start taking IRA distributions, and then, of course, put off Social Security until full retirement age and meet all of their financial needs.
That's great.
And are they traveling now?
Yeah, they are. I was actually out in France back in April, and we were going to meet up in Paris. And
of course you were.
Wow.
We haven't met for afternoon tea in Paris.
Slow down. How much do we pay you?
It was a client trip. And it's not,
you deducted it.
You said you
like, we can write that off, right? So unfortunately, the French rail workers all went on strike that day, so we didn't have the ability to meet up.
Oh, so you didn't get to deduct it, the client expense?
No deductions. I didn't get to put it on the expense report, unfortunately. we weren't able to meet up, but they have a blog that I've been able to follow throughout their travels. I believe they're in China right now. And they've got about another 6 months to go before they return to the United States.
And Lauren, you've been a practicing advisor for a long time now. How frequent is it where you see a change in life, whether it's health or a change in marital situation, change someone's retirement plan?
So you're on a path. You sat down with them. They've got this pretty defined thing. And then, boom.
Life happens.
It just – and it wasn't life-ending. It was just life-changing. It didn't – there was no long-term health effect.
Every single day of my life when I'm at work, I see some sort of transition going on, whether that's retirement, health scare, loss of a loved one, like a parent. I mean, that's what I do a lot of the time, is helping people through these different life crises that they weren't expecting to happen, but now you have to deal with it. And so that's really the power of financial planning, is being able to take all the puzzle pieces and put together the picture or redesign the plan to fit the new life.
Because the plan is static and life is not.
Exactly.
Well, you want a fluid plan. Exactly. You don't want to...
Everything's always changing. We're all surfing the waves of life constantly.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. One of the reasons that at Hanson McLean, we don't do those big three-ring binder plans, the 300-page plans, because we can plan, but then... As you said, we surf in the waves. We don't know what's coming next. And things So we plan according to what our hopes and dreams are and whatnot and what's in front of us.
Expecting that they're going to change.
Expecting they're going to change.
Expecting.
Absolutely.
Expecting.
They will.
All right. Well, yeah. Thank you, Lauren. I'm glad that you could take your busy time away from travel in Paris, France.
That did sound pretty funny.
Switzerland or wherever you go to visit with us here at Hanson.
No, I'm really glad you're part of the team
thank
here.
You. And Dude, Lauren, great job.
Lauren,
great job.
Lauren lives in Roseville, and a lot of our clients are Roseville, California, are out of that area. So thanks for being with us, Lauren, and for all you've done in the community.
Yeah,
thanks
a lot.
Lauren has a true passion of seeing that people are literate financially and has spent a lot of time in that area and really enjoys helping people grow in that region. So thank you, Laura. And it's really interesting, Pat, how life does change. Life happens. And there's always this balance that we have with people about saving for the future is good.
But
what about today as well?
Yeah. What happens if the future isn't there? Right. And you can't have the idea that the future isn't there because there's a good chance the future is going to be there. So it's a fine balance.
I had dinner with a young couple a year or two ago. They were both about 30. No kids yet. They took a year off work to travel the world.
Oh, that's nice.
And I thought, my generation, it's a different generation.
Your generation.
I'm 20 years older than them. I'm a whole generation above
them.
That's
okay.
I didn't know anyone who did that.
No. I knew one guy that did it.
All right. Well, there's always those dropouts. But, you know, they're not just dropouts these days. They're professionals that are doing it instead of waiting for something like this, waiting for a heart attack to really figure out what's important to you in your life. So anyway, we're out of time. We are here every week during the same time at this radio program, or you can get a blog of this, podcast of this, anytime you like, or you can read our blog at HansonMcLane.com. Anyway, we're out of time. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll see you next week. This has been Hanson McLane's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLane Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.
What matters most to you? Probably family and friends, but what else? When you're in your 20s, it's one thing. Your 30s and 40s, another. When your 50s creep in, you're older and wiser, but the sand in the hourglass of your asset accumulation stage has shifted. Right now, you're listening to Scott Hanson and Pat McLane. Sure, they've been hosting Money Matters for 20 years, but they've been CEOs of Hanson McLane Advisors for longer than that. If you're over 50 and you've been saving for retirement, you're probably wondering how your preparation stacks up. Here's what you should do. Go to HansonMcLane.com and either schedule a free consultation with one of our credentialed advisors, or if you're not quite ready for that, maybe take a look at some of the helpful materials in our learning library. You'll see tutorials, podcasts, and articles on things like Social Security, retirement planning, investments, and a whole slew of other things that can help you retire well. Over 50 and starting to see retirement up ahead? Make sure you do it right. We can help. Go to HansonMcLane.com today.